Just a reminder on the front end, if you'd like, you can reach out to us on Twitter at ClearFunction or hashtag it depends. We'd love to hear what you think of the podcast. Thanks. Welcome to another episode of It Depends. This is Ben Robin. I'm here with Daniel Pritchett.
Hello.
Jesse Brown.
Hey again.
Brian Lankford.
Hello again.
And we are going to talk about testing this week.
All right. That's a fun topic.
Yeah.
What kind of testing are we going to talk about, Daniel?
Software testing.
So not clicking with your mouse.
Okay, yeah. Clicking with your mouse. That's a good point.
That is actually a good point.
If you talk to people who say they don't test or they don't write tests or whatever, and a friend of mine likes to say everybody tests their software, but not everybody saves their tests so they can reuse them.
Right. Right. Yeah, so we're talking about reproducibility, reproducible tests.
Is that in the hopes that we don't have regressions, right? That we wouldn't have to sort of do entire tests of the whole system, all the functionality to make sure we covered everything.
Yeah, so you can improve to your employer. It does what you said.
Yeah, that too.
Right.
Which is great.
That is a... not the core point for me, but yeah, definitely.
What's the core point for you?
To prove to myself that things are what I think they are at any given moment.
Yeah, okay. So the audience of who you're doing testing for is a little different maybe, but the reason is the same?
I mean, I do bottom-up testing. Like, if I'm trying to make various pieces of a system do things, I have to first prove that the existing pieces do what I think they're doing, and then I start building on one bit after the other, and at each step verifying, okay, I'm in the right direction, I haven't gone off the rails.
Makes sense.
You kind of just alluded to it a little bit, but you did say like making sure what's there is already working.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I do think that like, you know, assertions and asserting that it's doing what you want, not talking about writing new code, but what I'm trying to say is you said refactorability, but without saying refactorability, you making a change to an existing system and you being comfortable with that change. So
right.
that's one of the big wins of testing is being able to, you know, change something and then prove that you didn't break what was already there.
Right.
I think of it as sort of cementing the business logic. If I write some code that does something and then I write a test around that code expecting that thing to happen, then it's like if someone ever changes the business logic here, my test will break and therefore they'll be like, oh, he did this for a reason.
Right.
So maybe I should at least rethink this or talk to him about it or try to figure out
why. Yeah. Is the test now invalid or or did you break something?
And you certainly could have both. Like if there are bad tests, it could just be a bad test, but, hopefully that's not what's happening.
A fine line.
Yeah.
And that depends a lot on the tools that you're using and how you write your tests. You know, making tests not be too brittle is one of the, it comes with experience in my, you know.
So when you talk about regression tests, to me, that seems like I hesitate to use the word superficial, but you're testing the end goal and none of the intermediate states. So it did technically do the thing, but to me that seems like brittle testing. If you're building, say, internal libraries that help you achieve different ends, I would want to test that those modules or subsystems or libraries meet their own internal goals. And none of that really directly relates to end-user functionality, but it's critical importance. It's of critical importance for the developers and the flexibility and the growth of the system.
So I think this is the best time for us to talk about different categories of testing, because we've mentioned regression testing as a type of thing, and we've sort of referred to other things not by name. So maybe it'd be good, just for the sake of the conversation that's coming, for us to define our terms so that folks know if they don't talk like we do, this is what we mean by this thing. So Jesse, do you want to define like regression just to start with?
Sure. Regression tests, usually in my mind, come from a ticket entered in, you know, Sifter or some other bug tracking software. And if you've reproduced a bug and you write a test to ensure that that bug no longer happens again so that you can tell your client that it's fixed and you'll know if someone ever makes a change that makes that test makes that test fail again, you know you've reintroduced the bug.
Yeah.
And so that's one category of tests.
So you might write like a unit test for something like that. What's a unit test?
Yeah, so a unit test, in a very broad definition, is that it's a very scoped test, generally speaking, to a particular module, sort of like Daniel was saying, module or function even, that you take all the dependencies that that function has and usually fake them out or mock them out so that you don't end up writing to a database. You don't end up calling Stripe and accidentally making a payment. You're taking all the external factors out and just making sure that that module's code runs the way that you want it. It goes in those if statements that you're expecting. It returns the result that you're expecting. So one of the main reasons you do unit tests is for speed. And also just the reproducibility is a lot higher. The brittleness is a lot lower because you don't have all these third-party dependencies that you're not directly tied to them and testing them on a day-to-day basis. You know, if you hit Stripe, if you've got your test auto-running every time you make a keystroke and you're hitting Stripe every time, then that's going to – eventually they're probably just going to lock your account for, like, you know, rate limit problems. Yeah. And so, you know, it's just – it makes everything – feedback loop is much tighter.
Right. Yeah. And it's not just the third-party stuff, too. It could be just other parts of the system that you're not actually testing at this point. You're just just testing this one little unit of your code base. Mm-hmm. And so you want to fake everything else out to...
Right. Yeah, you don't want to have to build the world of, like, your entire database and your schema and all the object relation mapping that you need to test that you can, like, you know, check to see whether a credit card passes, like, an algorithm.
It's really almost just testing contracts, hopefully, right? Like, I'm getting this in, I'm expecting this out, and I just want to verify that that's what happened.
Yep.
And so that would be more of a unit test style. We typically wouldn't expect unit tests to hit databases or APIs or something like that. Instead, we would call those integration tests. Yep. Talk a little bit about that, maybe the difference there.
So integration tests, like Ben was alluding to, they have a dependency on either an external system or another piece of the system that's not that you need to test the interaction between. So this is usually what I say, like, testing the seams between all your modules. So if you've got a module that does one thing and a module that does another and they interact with each other, in unit test land, you're sort of testing each module independently and that they, you know, they make a call the way that you think that it's going to work. But integration test is actually making sure that seam works the way that you want it to, making sure that your encryption method actually encrypts like it's supposed to, or that your database call actually ends up saving like you want it to. And you know, that your Stripe calls work like you want.
Makes sense. So we do a lot of testing in .NET and in Rails because that's what we write a lot of our apps in. Do other things, but that's the majority. So what kind of tools would we typically use for unit and integration testing in those two languages or platforms? We can just rattle off a list for people. They can go check them out later if they want more information, but just to get everybody on the same page on the front end.
Okay. For Ruby or Rails, I used to use RSpec a lot. I'm still comfortable with it, but Minitest is now part of the standard library, so you'll see that as the first choice for many people, and that's unit testing. Testing the specific modules and methods do what you think they should. And on the integration side, that's been evolving year to year. People like to use Capybara and sometimes Selenium, things that'll wire up to a browser and simulate a series of browser actions, say, I logged in, I clicked here, here, and here, and the expected user flow worked properly. I got the expected output.
Yep. And what about on the .NET side, Brian?
On the .NET side, I'm actually not too familiar coming from a .NET background, when I was doing testing years ago, there were some things out there that it was just kind of hard to do. I felt like, as a matter of fact, I felt like we can talk about this later, but just coming into the Rails world, it was just so much easier to do testing than it was in .NET. I don't know. There was like there's things today like Shoodly, and there's the unit testing that's in .NET natively now is a lot better in my opinion. But I don't know, Jesse, if you got more technical details on what those tools are, because.
Yeah, Daniel was talking a little bit about, like, Minitest in Rails. The equivalent in .NET that a lot of people use are either InUnit or XUnit. Those are the two most popular. MS Test is Microsoft's version. I haven't used that one too often, but, you know, it's less about the framework in .NET, the testing framework, unlike Rails, because Rails sort of has the language makes itself a lot more open to writing spec test, where in .NET you have to kind of get into a little more extreme syntax to get that same sort of you know, the way of writing tests that you would in Rails. But yeah, XUnit or InUnit are two very popular test frameworks. Brian mentioned Shouldly, which is just an assertion library that just adds a bunch of convenience right. methods to making sure all that stuff works the way you want. And for substitutions, or mocks as they call them in other languages, InSubstitute is our sort of go-to .NET yeah. Substitution framework. There's also InMock, and I think those are the two that I'm most familiar with.
And what do you use in PicBasic?
Oh man, no just idea.
Kidding. Just kidding. Well, so that's kind of all by way of introduction, talking about why we test, what we're trying to accomplish, what the different types of tests are, categories of tests, and then also kind of some tools. Just briefly mentioning, I'll put links to the show notes for all of the things we mentioned. You can get more information if you like there. But now let's sort of move into how we test, our philosophy of testing. We'll talk about a lot of things, but we've got some notes on the board that we'll probably run through. I guess maybe let's start with just experiences you guys have had with testing in particular.
I've got a good one. When I'd been working on Ruby for a few years, I decided to learn the Go programming language, and I realized pretty quickly that I didn't understand Go as well as I thought I did. So I may have been at a point where when writing Ruby, I could write 5 or 10 lines off the top of my head and they would basically do what I thought they did. If I wrote a 5 or 10 line method in Go, it wouldn't work. It would blow up, and then I'd go through fixing it and it'd eventually stop blowing up and realize that I'd have about a bug every single line in Go. So I wound up having to stop and break it down to do basically one thing at a time and write Go unit tests every time for every line basically. So this line does this, assert that it actually does what I think it did. So that was a case where I had a goal that made sense to me in the abstract, but I wasn't getting there at all with my tools. So sticking to very tiny unit tests gave me the confidence I needed to build on a fairly stable foundation.
I think I'm hearing you say a little bit about composability of code too. There's writing code that is testable, and then there's writing code that's not. So I can remember being green behind the ears, maybe in school or whatever, writing 50 or 100 line methods that do something, it's really hard to test all of the moving pieces in something like that. Whereas if you write something that's, couple, 3, 5 lines, that's much easier to write a unit test around to verify the contract that I'm giving what I expect and I'm getting what I expect.
Yeah, for sure. And I have that same problem whenever I work with a new junior programmer. They approach me with something that's broken and they say, my 50 line method doesn't work. And I say, it's a 50 line method. And that's like the extent of my advice.
Yep.
And I feel bad, but I have not been able to program that way successfully in a long time, if ever. So it's hard for me to even know where to start.
It's just important to call out that composability of code leads toward better testing, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, as you're writing, even just the code itself, thinking about how am I going to test this is very helpful as you try to design what the best code is going to look like.
Yeah, you keep saying like inputs and outputs. When I call this method with these inputs, does it output something? And you were talking about like junior developers. That's a mistake that we see a lot, is that a lot of junior developers, they make code that has consequences instead of code that's composable by making small pieces that then, end up being the result that you want. They'll make a giant method that returns nothing that does everything.
Right.
And to your point, it's impossible to test.
Right.
And it has consequences throughout the entire system.
Right.
And so breaking it down into much smaller pieces where you've got inputs and outputs. And I think that's sort of the rise of functional languages to an extent as well, right? Is making it's a lot easier to understand something when you've got a clear contract in and contract out for every method that happens.
Right. Yeah.
I was going to speak to that just a little bit because, I was thinking back, 10 years ago doing .NET, it was, we just didn't write our apps thinking that way. It wasn't, it wasn't until this whole, inversion of control kind of stuff, the IOC stuff kind of got going that it got to be a lot easier now to, now I can write a test behind this, whereas before the way I was writing apps, it didn't include any of that kind of stuff. And so it was very hard to test. And maybe that's just the nature of the language of C# being a static, a strongly typed language versus a Ruby or something where you can kind of fake stuff out pretty easily, I would think. Mm-hmm.
To define a word, a phrase you said there, inversion of control. If you're working with a library like Ruby or JavaScript or another dynamic language like that, you probably haven't heard that term before. And languages like Java and .NET and other statically typed languages, that's usually referred to as a method of getting your dependencies pushed into your code at runtime,
mm-hmm.
so that you register that my interface of my database is a repository, and it's like, you know, iPeople database, and you code against that contract, not the implementation, and then at runtime that implementation is provided by an inversion of control container, and this ceremony, to Brian's point, is not necessary in other languages, mm-hmm. and so I think that's where testing in .NET took a little longer to be sort of mainstream, because it is there's a lot of ceremony there to get to a point where it just works.
And it probably tainted my view of testing, mm-hmm. honestly, because mm-hmm. that hurdle of going from, you know, like when all this stuff was introduced, like, oh, you're putting stuff together a whole lot differently mm-hmm. than you were before. And so I kept having to ask myself, is it worth it? And we can debate about this, whether it's worth it or not. I think it is, but to some degree, but at some point it gets to be a lot of work for maybe not a lot of payoff. I don't know.
And it becomes hard to quantify too. I mean, like number of tests you've written in a code base of who knows what size, or even percent of code coverage sometimes is a number that is hard to say, this is what that means,
mm-hmm.
You know? And so it becomes difficult to demonstrate the value. I tend to think of it in terms of reproducibility. If I'm able to, in some examples, not have to spin up the entire application to click around on some screens to verify that what I just wrote does something, mm-hmm. that saves me a ton of time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Especially if I've got to do that 100 times a week or something like that.
Yeah. Sure.
Developer optimization is what you're referring to.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is a huge time savings, mm-hmm. I feel like. But and then works itself out later in the bottom line, of course. But
yeah. And Brian, you were hinting at it being really hard to get moving, a sort of testing inertia.
Yeah.
If you're dealing with an existing mature application that is built with really big building blocks that aren't tested, it is really hard to even think about where to start putting that under test one piece at a time. But if you have a new system and you're already approaching it with some sort of test-friendly mentality, it's not so bad just to, step one, create the test harness, step two, write the first test that doesn't do anything that interesting. Yeah. Once you're there...
Right.
Maintaining some discipline of testing is not nearly as hard.
I remember we put a story in the TapGive board for writing the first, I think it was JavaScript, React test, I think mm-hmm. is what it was. But because we know that there is that sort of overhead of, man, getting the test harness in place or getting that first test written,
mm-hmm.
there is some churn there that has to take place before a lot of tests start getting written. And so we wanted to, going in on the front end, just say, we're going to do testing. Like, this is something we're going to take seriously. And so that was even a story or a task for us right off the bat, was just get that first one written so that as you go, you can continue to do more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think tests are also really good for code reviews. It kind of gives me a place to start. Sometimes I'll just, you know, open the pull request and go straight down to where the tests are just to read what they think that the code is doing before I even look at too much of the other code, just to so that I know where they're at in their story or whatever they're working on, so that my expectations, for one thing, if it doesn't line up, then I immediately know to be like, okay, hey, they coded it this way. I was thinking it was going to be this way. You know, before I do too much else, we should probably talk about it and make sure that it meets the goals that we were hoping. But it's a nice contract for the pull request. You know, you don't have to go back and be like, what were you hoping this line of code does? Mm-hmm. Instead, you're like, you've got the tests there that tell you what they were expecting.
Yeah, and you would think that the most significant functionality is tested.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That's a good place to start if that assumption's true. I think in our case it is. But
I've even used them on sprint reviews sometimes. It's like if you've got a story they're working on, it's so technical. Like there's really nothing gooey, you know, on the front end to look at to show somebody.
Yeah,
I mean, it depends on the audience you're reviewing with. But if your project manager or product owner is somewhat, you know, familiar or technical in nature, you could probably show them, here's some integration tests I wrote to prove that this works, you mm-hmm. know, to what the story is asking it to do.
Yep.
And that's kind of nice to have. I mean, otherwise you're just opening up your code and just stepping through it and showing it here's how I can show you how it's working, you know, so.
So, Brian, you mentioned IOC earlier, and then, Jesse, you gave a little explainer that was really helpful
mm-hmm.
Right after that. I just remember when I was early on in my career as a .NET developer, someone older, more experienced than me told me, this was years ago, told me, once you know and start doing IOC and TDD, that's when you'll know that you're mature or that you're experienced or something. That was what they said. Now, we don't have to debate that statement, but what is TDD? Because that relates to our conversation today.
Test-driven development. Right, Daniel? Can you explain a little bit?
Yeah. For me, it is designing software in such a way that the pieces I build are testable so that at every step I can verify that I'm doing what I think I'm doing and I'm heading in the direction I think I'm heading.
And I guess the common methodology is the red-green refactor, right?
Yep, I don't know you get if a failing I do that, test. But yeah, that's pretty common for...
It's sort of the TDD doctrine.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is you write a test that is going to test what you want to write code for. It fails, so it goes red.
And you go
then you write the code that makes the test pass, and only the code that makes the test pass, and it goes green. And then you refactor your code into, you know, however much you need to or want to so that the test continues to pass.
So, sure, red-green refactor is the platonic ideal of TDD. I'd rarely hit that, and...
Well, yeah.
I don't... necessarily want to suggest anyone should, but that is the anchor point at the other end of the spectrum from no testing. Everything's red, green, refactor, or nothing is, and you have to figure out where you are on the spectrum for any given skill level or project or budget.
Sure. Yeah, I think TDD is great for learning to test, mm-hmm. for developers who have no testing experience. Mm-hmm. Starting there, I think, is probably the only really good way to realize your dependencies if you're not comfortable mm-hmm. with realizing your dependencies, which, you know, newer developers, you know, that's just not something that you're thinking about. You know, you don't think about where your dependencies are and how you might fake them to make things happen. Mm-hmm. I think TDD exposes that very quickly because if you've got the red green deployment stuff, you're like, oh yeah, I wrote this method and I need to call a database. Well, immediately you're going to realize that that's way too much work. And if you're following like the TDD doctrine, you're going to be like, okay, well, then I just need to make an interface that pretends it's a database.
Mm-hmm.
And like without doing TDD, I don't think that you'll know to sort of go that direction.
Yeah.
But here's my but. I'm not a huge TDD fan. I'll say it out loud. And it's mostly because in my experience, if you go too far to the spectrum of TDD and everything becomes too brittle, mm-hmm. you end up not testing your API, but testing your implementation. And I'll pick on Daniel a little bit here earlier because he was talking about his Go and testing every line. That's mm-hmm. what I feel like TDD can get you into, where you're testing every line and making sure that every line does what it wants instead of that your API of like do the thing did the thing that you expected.
That actually, I had a similar thought about, you know, you were talking, Daniel, earlier about, and I think it's a positive that you don't have to spin the app up every time to mm-hmm. test something, but in terms of like when you ship something, right, the customer doesn't really care if the one line of code does what it's supposed to do.
Right.
They want all the lines of code to do what they're trying to do, whatever that is.
Yeah.
So there's got to be some sort of integration or full system mm-hmm. Success there that writing a bunch of unit tests over individual lines or characters isn't going to – it's important. It's an important step, but it's mm-hmm. not going to get you all the way.
Yeah. I've got lots of points to make on that.
Go ahead.
The only one I want to jump in now is testing is often used to evaluate and enforce internal quality, and customers are rarely paying for the parts they can't see. They're just assuming the parts they can't see and paying for the parts they can, the external quality. So a web app that has all the screens and buttons and colors I expect is what an end user is likely to tell you they're looking for.
Right.
And they're not going to mention, oh, and it needs to have 5 nines of uptime or not break every weekend or whatever.
Sure.
So there are things that we have to do as professionals to get them what they want.
Yeah, that's true. And it's definitely a spectrum, too. It's not a binary. It's not all tests or no tests.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with TDD, but I do think that it can produce poor results just like anything else, any other thing that you follow, any other sort of pattern. Like, you could follow it to the extreme, and I do think that... Mm-hmm. You know, it can produce some really brittle tests, which I would argue are worse than just not having tests in a lot of cases.
For what it's worth, that test every line example is not meant to be a how-to guy to write a good program. I just realized that I was making way too many assumptions, and they were almost all wrong, so I had to think of a way to continue making progress.
It actually almost is an example of what Jesse said. Mm-hmm. I mean, you were saying, Jesse, that TDD is a good place to start if you're not testing already. Mm-hmm. And that it sounds kind of like that's what you did, Daniel. Yeah. Was, you know, I'm making assumptions and I need to figure out what they even are mm-hmm. before I can move on past this and figure out what's broken.
Yeah.
I was going to jump in. That was kind of what Jesse was talking about. That's kind of sort of what I guess I've come to also with TDD. I felt sort of the same way sometimes. It's like, why are we spending all this time testing this line of code over this? And sort of what I come away with was, you know, test the things you care about. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's kind of been my sort of gauge, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like if you're building a payment platform, test all your payment stuff that you're doing, you know, make sure that's well covered and tested. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you have to get down to line by line, maybe in some cases you do for something that's that important, then you do that. Right. But maybe, you know, we don't need to spend a ton of time having a bunch of line by line tests around, you know, around updating someone's first name or something like that,
if it's not the core of your business, it deserves, right. Yeah, I think different parts of the application deserve different amounts of time given. And mm-hmm. that's directly related to what you do as a business.
Yeah.
In general, I would agree, but a little pushback in the sense that you never know what sort of the secondary line of, you know, not directly related to the business, yeah. when that's going to directly affect the primary it. Line. Sure. Yeah. Right?
Yes.
So I'm thinking of, for example, for the sure. name splitter,
right?
Right. If you give somebody a one text field to enter their full name, and then you want to split that into first and last and save that in the database, well, that may or may not be important depending on where it is in your app. But if that stops the primary interaction, if it breaks, then you've got to write a lot of tests around that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Right.
That's a good example of maybe, you know, there's a little bit to the secondary line of code.
Right. So listening to you guys talk about only testing the things you care about, that reminded me of something that I really liked reading recently. Suggestion that tests or testing should be considered a first-class client of your system. So, for instance, let's say you're building a back-end system. You just said you were showing off the integration tests. Well, the end user's not really going to care until you can actually wire it up and prove that it does the thing that they're going to want to spend money on, right?
Sure.
So
it depends on the end user.
So the point about testing is first-order concern is it is worth redesigning your software and your implementation to ensure that you can test it. And that's kind of what I wondered with you saying only test what you care about. It's possible if you wait till the end and then decide you want to test something to realize, oh, we can't test it because we didn't build it that way. Sort of like your examples of earlier in your non-testing career.
Right.
If you wait till the end, you can't test it. But if you at least try up front to make it testable, then you have the choice and the option.
Yeah, and I think that's why TDD caught on like wildfire is because it does sort of – it forces you down that path of at least being able to say, I do want to test this and I know where to test it from. Where the opposite is, like you said, it's almost impossible. If you've got a working system and you just mm-hmm. want to start breaking it up for test reasons only, like that's a really hard sell to anyone.
Right.
But once you're an experienced developer, I don't find that TDD offers, I know where my dependencies and where my like seams are between mm-hmm. like, you know, me and the database and me and the internet and, you know, me and these other modules. Like I naturally know where to put those. And so do most developers mm-hmm. after you've done it for a little while. And so I don't feel like starting with the test is necessarily more productive for me.
Right.
I think I write better APIs when I don't do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But then I go write the test anyway. Like I'm usually pretty close to 90 and 100% test coverage when I write a new module. That's, you know, a piece of the system. You know, that's where I try to be.
That's a good point about APIs and the way they look if you test them from the beginning versus the end. Sometimes I like to build one to throw away, like set up a prototype, solve the problem, and then come back and kind of redesign my working solution to make it good and test that. So definitely I can see that. If you really have no idea where you're going, then testing every single step you take is probably a waste of time.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing to look into. But
I know we're short on time, Ben, but I have one thing that I've been thinking about ever since we discussed this as an episode title.
Sounds good.
I read a veteran test proponent's list of five reasons and five guiding principles on how and why he does TDD. The first one was, we're in this for the money. What he meant was, I only test because I think it's going to help me do my job more effectively. Like, I'm getting paid to program. I think I can get paid more to program better if I test. So that's one of his guiding principles. The second one was, we rely on human judgment. And that's more of what Jesse was saying, is don't test everything all the time just because testing is a religion, but test what you can within reason. The third one was, we test the chains link by link, which was my point earlier, that I have to prove to myself that I'm doing what I think I'm doing and going where I think I'm going. The fourth one was, we keep internal quality high. And I know we talked about that.
Yep.
Like, it's not just testing the edges, but also testing the intermediate steps. And the final one was, we shape design with testability, which goes back to what I said about making testing a first-class concern. Like, if you know it needs to be tested and you intend to test it, then that changes how you build it. So that's really, that's not a religion. That's just a pragmatic way of getting programming tasks done. And if you're open to that, then maybe you're open to TDD, even if you don't feel like you are.
Yeah. Yeah, those are good points. I think going back to history, like Microsoft and .NET testability, specifically MVC, like when it first came out, they're like, oh, it's so testable and everything. But then, like, there were just certain pieces that just weren't, because it wasn't done TDD. You're like, oh, yeah, I need an HTTP context. And, like, that's impossible, literally impossible to create.
Right.
Because they just, there are all these sealed classes, mm-hmm. and you can't, you know, do anything. And so now they've got, you know, ASP.NET Core, and they've learned their lesson. They've got dependency, you know, they've got inversion of control, like, built into .NET Core now, so mm-hmm. that you can, so they can magically get these dependencies that you register, you know, however you need to do it. And so I think, you know, if you're an API vendor, then TDD can be super important. You've got to make sure all your dependencies are exposed in some way so that your consumers can prove that their code works that sits on top of yours without,
right.
you know, without causing a, you know.
That's a really good point.
So, yeah, I think, as always, testing is involved, and it's still evolving today. You know, we get mm-hmm. tons of tools. We've got headless Chrome and Selenium and all these other things to test end-to-end. Like, I think there's databases out there that will, you know, you can basically say, hey, these next 8,000 commands, like, go ahead and just roll them back as soon as I tell you to, you know, so that you can just run against a database all the time. And so, I don't know. I think our philosophy of testing is still changing today.
Well, great. Thank you guys for the conversation. If you're listening and you feel like this has been helpful to you, please share the episode on social media, either Twitter or Facebook. You can always reach out to us at ClearFunction or hashtag ItDepends, and we would love to hear what you thought about it. Thanks. You've been listening to It Depends, a podcast by ClearFunction. Clear Function is a group of happy engineers based in Memphis, Tennessee. We partner with visionaries to bring their ideas to life. For more information, check out our website at clearfunction.com.